There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
We've had a great run, and I appreciate Fuck That Nation for being there the whole time.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to College Football Live. I'm Chris Cotter. Joining me on this special one-hour edition of the show, Trevor Maddich, Marcus Spears, and Greg McElroy. Guys, we had a wonderful New Year's Day of football, both day and night, and really chief among all the many stories out there was Urban Meyer coaching his final game at Ohio State, going off into retirement. Afterward, Tom Rinaldi on the field asked him if this truly was his last game coaching.
The moment has come. What do you reflect upon?
I reflect on I'm a very blessed person with my family. I'm very blessed. I've had some of the best coaches in college football coach for me. And you look at our rosters over the years, you could say we've had the best players ever play this game. And I'm very proud of that.
Never is a very big word. What are the chances we'll never see you lead another team out of a tunnel?
I don't believe that's going to happen. I'm going to enjoy it tonight. I don't believe I'm going to coach again.
Marcus, you believe Urban? You think he'll never coach again?
The fact that he said, I don't believe I'll ever coach again, makes me not believe Urban Meyer's last game was coached at the Rose Bowl. Yeah, last game at Ohio State. But I firmly believe we'll see Urban Meyer coaching somewhere at some point again, either college or even maybe pro football.
I don't see him going the pro route, but I am really fascinated by the word never, right? Never. He's 54 years old. This guy still has a lot of gas in the tank. And now that we're seeing coaches get that itch yet again in their late 60s, Mac Brown has hopped back in. Butch Davis a couple years ago hopped back in. Those guys are both 67 years old. Frank Solich is well into his 70s. You're seeing the coaching gap get a little bit older. So I can't say never. Who knows? 5 years, 10 years down the road, maybe he scratches that itch once again. But I'd be surprised if yesterday was, in fact, his final game as a head coach.
But, guys, I wouldn't be surprised if it is his final game as a head coach, because you talk about that itch, Greg. I mean, being in the competition, the rush of coaching, the rush of game day, the pressure and coming through the pressure victorious, that's like a drug. I mean, actually like a drug. And the guys that have trouble are the ones that separate from the game and then don't have anything to do with the game after that. That's a withdrawal that's really hard to deal with. I think that if Urban Meyer is able to be involved with the game enough that he can scratch that itch, that he can have enough of that drug, that feeling that he had as a head coach, then maybe he will accept that lesser role and still be a part of the game, and that might be enough.
Yeah, health was a concern with him at Florida. It is again now at Ohio State, retiring here once again. And obviously, it's going to play a role down the road. So now it's time for Ryan Day at Ohio State. Coach Urban Meyer, after the game in the locker room, handing over the whistle, if you will, to Ryan Day. And, Mac, when you talk about this Ohio State team, they've won over 90% of their games under Coach Urban Meyer. It's been an unbelievable run. They have to take a step back. It would be natural to think they would, but how big of a step can this program take a step in terms of moving backwards and not moving forward?
Well, I don't envision a step back. I look at Ohio State, and they still recruited a remarkably high level. Ryan Day was going to be a star somewhere else, so I had a guy with the Ohio State program tell me yesterday, if he's going to be a star, it might as well be with us. This guy is extremely well-respected amongst his peers. I had a chance to visit with Chip Kelly yesterday, and he said that he has been poised for this opportunity. Remember, Ryan Day played for Chip Kelly and was kind of his protege for a number of years. So Ryan Day is going to do a remarkably good job with this program moving forward. It's just a matter of how much he adjusts things. Did they alter what they do offensively? How do they tinker with what they're doing on the defensive side of the football? He's been put through the ringer before. The first three games of the season were very difficult to deal with, given everything that surrounded this program in Urban Meyer's absence. But if he can handle that, he can handle anything. So I don't anticipate a huge step back, if any, when Ryan Day takes over the lead.
First of all, these various coaches, especially the successful one with Urban Meyer, obviously Nick Saban at Alabama, they start to create these coaching trees. They start to create these proteges and guys that can do the job at a high level. We just don't find out until they get the opportunity to become a head coach, and we attribute every part of the success of whichever program they take over to them. Here's a question for me, though. Dwayne Haskins leaves, right, and how important that quarterback position is. Where does Ryan Day move from there? We've seen Urban Meyer with the ability to restock, retool, and I know Tate Martell is at Ohio State right now. Justin Fields had threw his hat out there for a possible transfer in Ohio State, possibly being one of those destinations. I thought Ryan Day did a tremendous job in the interim when they were going through all of this stuff with Urban Meyer, just keeping things calm, keeping it to football, and the team performed and seemed to respond to him. And you saw when they handed over the whistle, the team was excited about it. So the first step a coach has to take is his team being ready to play for him and believing in the guy that he is. And I think Ryan Day has already passed that test, so he's off to a good start.
Well, his early success will depend on who plays quarterback. I mean, they, for the longest time, had JT Barrett at quarterback, which meant run the ball, short passing game, not a lot of vertical. Ryan Day, in handling this offense this year with Dwayne Haskins, threw that ball deep down the field. I mean, you had a vertical passing attack that really made up for a running game that at times disappeared over the course of the season. Well, if Haskins goes off to the NFL, then who's the quarterback? We know that Ryan Day can coach a deep pocket passer. The question is, how well will he do if he's got to revert to the older style? If a Tate Martell, for example, is the starter, how well will he do coordinating that style of offense? Because quarterback play will make all the difference.
Last time Ohio State replaced the legend at coach, it was Earl Bruce coming in replacing Woody Hayes, and he was basically consensus coach of the year back in 1979, so precedent has been set there. Let's go to the All-State Sugar Bowl. Prior to the game, Bevo and Uga almost got into it. I couldn't even believe this. I mean, was this a harbinger of things to come? It looked like it because of the way Texas started the game. They got a Longhorn win, and then after the game, Sam Ellinger had a proclamation.
For all these fans who are in the stands and those who are watching on TV, what does this do to set up Texas for a springboard into next season?
Longhorn Nation, we're back!
I don't know, Matt. It's the Longhorns back. They beat Oklahoma this year. They played for the Big 12 championship despite losing to Oklahoma, and they upset a number 5 team in Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. They back?
The Longhorns are not back, not yet, although I don't blame Ellinger because it probably felt like they were in that moment. They won't be back until they actually win the Big 12 championship.
Yeah, that's the expectation at Texas. Look, those were great wins, the Oklahoma win and obviously the Georgia win and the All-State Sugar Bowl. But with that being said, Chris, you cannot declare being back until you're a champion of something. And I guess being the champion of the Sugar Bowl was a big deal to them. It is a big deal for the program. It's a big deal for the booster, the high-profile team that Georgia has been the past couple of years. That's a huge statement win for Texas. But they're not back until they're Big 12 champs. I agree with Trevor on that one.
Now, one thing about being back, Texas is a place that has always carried expectations. And one thing that Tom Herman's done a really good job of over the course of his tenure as a head coach, both at Houston and at Texas, he's done a great job as an underdog. And one of what Sam Ellinger did yesterday, he basically put expectations on the 2019 Longhorns. So you have to think his coach, Tom Herman's probably sitting there like, oh my goodness, can't we just enjoy this one win without thinking about putting undue expectations on ourselves moving forward? But look, last night was a remarkable performance. They have to feel great about being able to match the physicality and dominate that game for the entire game, really, until the very end when Georgia cut it to only one score. But that was a tremendous performance. They're not back yet, but they're well on their way. The next step is being expected to do great things and not losing to Maryland week one. It's carrying that expectations and then breaking through and exceeding those expectations.
Well, I think those expectations are out there now for Longhorn fans. Talk about exceeding expectations. Central Florida, 25-game winning streak on the line in the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl. They weren't able to contain Joe Burrow and LSU, unfortunately. Now, the question is here. So it was an unbelievable run for Josh Heupel and his crew. But now, will their group of five reign end here, Marcus? Now, do they have to, like Boise State before them, do they hand it off to somebody else here in the group of five?
I just never bought into the perception, Chris. I mean, I understand the hype of being 12-0. I understand UCF making a big deal of their season. They beat Auburn last year in a bowl game. And I get it. I understand it from an internal program suggestion. And they played, they did fairly well against LSU. Now, I don't want to sit here and be the one to mention LSU played without their whole defense almost. And obviously, UCF didn't have Mackenzie Milton. So.
You did just mention it, though.
Yeah, let me. But to that point, they put up some points and they showed some success. And they do have really high class athletes that can play at some of these universities. But it just proved that the week in, week out schedule that a lot of these Power Five teams face, UCF would lose more than one game. They wouldn't go undefeated in a lot of these other conferences. So to make that argument and base it off of one bowl game that you could play and contend and you should be in the college football playoff, everybody road is not the same. And that's always been the perception for me. But kudos to UCF. 12-1 is another really good year. They brought in a brand new head coach. So there's some type of system and infrastructure in place at Central Florida to continue to let them have success in the American. But just getting off into the conversation about UCF being a powerhouse and they should be in the college football playoff. We knew better than that. We've always known better than that. Every conversation that we've had, every analyst, every person that talked about UCF knew better than to think that UCF was going to be a team that could compete in these other conferences.
Well, yeah, that's fine. The initial question was, is UCF still the best team and the premier program in the group of five? And the answer is yes. Now, Fresno State is an outstanding program, and Boise State, they're replacing their quarterback. UCF is going to be in a little transition as well. But UCF is still the standard right now when it comes to the group of five. But that's the group of five. Like what you said, Marcus, we're not talking about being involved in the college football playoff. UCF and winning 25 straight games, that's a remarkable accomplishment. Beating Auburn last year in the Peach Bowl, tremendous, tremendous run. But as far as discussing their inclusion in the college football playoff, that is not something I can get behind. They're still way behind the eight ball because they lost to a less than 100% LSU team. Granted, they didn't have their quarterback, and I'll allow them off the hook for that. They lost to a less than 100% LSU team who lost to the eventual national championship participant, Alabama, 29-0 at their home field. So the difference between UCF and LSU is pretty significant, but the difference between UCF and a national championship contender is massive.
Yeah, G-Ban, back to, I didn't answer the question. You're exactly right. With UCF being one of the best in the, absolutely they are. They are. They proved that over the past 2 years. It can be fickle, though, and I want to see if it continues to be in that. But this whole narrative about UCF against Power Five teams in the college football playoff, and we should expand the playoff to make UCF comfortable, that should be put to bed.
Guys, what bothers me here is that they had a chance to prove that they're worthy of the playoff, and they turned it down. Florida offered them a three-game series, two at Florida, one at UCF. And the response from UCF was, we're a top-10 program. We don't do two for one. We only do one for one. Well, they already are top 10 right now. I thought that wasn't good enough. I thought they wanted to be top 4. To be top 4, you can't win your bowl game because that's not what the committee looks at. That's after the committee's done. You've got to schedule better in your non-conference. And Florida gave them a chance. UCF said no. And to me, big picture, that is really disturbing.
Well, top 10, top 4, top 2. In order to be top 2, you got to be either Alabama or Clemson. That certainly is what we have seen over the past few years. This year, no different. We're going to preview the national championship game between these two very familiar foes when we come back on College Football Live.
Clemson and Alabama once again meeting for a championship.
Ngabalola looking deep in the end zone.
Lawrence lofts it up. Touchdown!
The National Championship, Monday on ESPN.
If we might ask everyone who considers themselves to be on your team tonight to one more time stand up and show the support and love and courage to Tyler Trent.
A poignant moment at the College Football Awards ceremony last month. It's with a heavy heart that I report that Tyler Trent, the young Purdue fan whose battle with bone cancer captured the hearts of Americans everywhere, passed away last night. Purdue released the following statement. First and foremost, we offer our condolences to Tyler's family and friends. While there are no words to ease the hurt at times like this, we hope some comfort can be found in knowing what an inspiration Tyler is to our student athletes, coaches, staff, and fans. The entire Purdue Athletics family has been touched by his courageous battle, positive spirit, and unwavering faith. Tyler was the embodiment of a true Boilermaker who will live on in each of us. We will forever be hashtag Tyler Strong. Earlier this fall, Tom Rinaldi penned a really heartfelt piece on the life of this remarkable young man.
This picture right here really shares his character. First of all, he's smiling, and he's a super independent person. Once he puts his mind to something and he's determined to do it, he does it.
The smile, the smarts, the strength. Tyler Trent had all those things then.
Come on, come on. Trick play. Oh.
Yes, yeah, yeah!
Yeah!
Woo! All
right. Trick play.
And though it may be harder to see, he has them all now.
How do you see the future?
An immediate future in my mind is that Purdue beats Ohio State next Saturday.
One, two, three. Oh.
Before the weight loss and the compromised speech and the partial paralysis, Tyler's fight began long before he ever came to Purdue. At 15, his life changed during a summer game of Frisbee with friends.
When I went and I threw that Frisbee, I actually broke my arm because my bone was so weak from the tumor eating it away.
It was osteosarcoma, bone cancer.
Your first thought?
Will he make it? Will we be able to beat it?
In October 2014, doctors replaced the top half of Tyler's arm with titanium. After 9 months of grueling chemotherapy, remission, and 2 years of cancer-free life. And then 4 months before entering Purdue on a presidential scholarship, the cancer returned.
The first thing I said to my doctor, I don't care how hard it is, but I'm going to school on time.
In September 2017, Tyler had surgery to replace his pelvis. 11 days later, he started school on time. Not crutches nor chemo sessions stopped Tyler from making sure he'd have tickets for the Michigan game last season.
He said, Dad, I'm going to go camp out so I can be first in line so I can have the front row seats. And I said, Tyler, do you really need to do that? And he said, yes, Dad, I need to do it.
The head coach, Jeff Brohm, was among the first to see him.
I thought it was a one-time thing. I just thought that Coach Brohm was coming over to say hi to him, and that would be it.
It wasn't. From being on the field as an honorary captain last season to being back for the season opener this year. All while the cancer spread to his spine, forcing him to leave school this fall. He's home now, 20 years old, in hospice care.
He is terminal. We don't know the number of days. It's more a matter of his body telling us.
room now.
After the Boilermakers beat Nebraska September 29th, the team knew what they wanted to do the next day.
What's up, buddy?
What's up?
How you doing? We got a little gift for our team captain, man.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
this is good.
Oh, thank you so much.
No problem.
We thank you for this time that we just get to spend here together. We ask for healing in your name. Amen.
Amen. How did he look to you?
He looks like a Boilermaker. He looks like somebody who's going to fight until there is no fight.
It's a huge encouragement, especially when you're going through a life-threatening disease and don't know how many days you have left.
As the Boilermakers welcome the Buckeyes, Tyler Trent believes he will be there.
Purdue's going to win. That's what I think is going to happen. Purdue is going to win.
I think it's up here on the left.
You got him?
Yeah, I got him.
6 days after that prediction, Tyler had a trip to take and a game to see.
Absolutely awesome he's able to be here tonight and feel this support in person.
Still alive.
What?
Still alive.
Yeah.
When you've been through something like I have and been a part of the program like I have, it becomes your life, so.
More in space. The first to speed. A first down for Purdue. He's still going.
That's what we needed right there.
And every Boilermaker, they will all say, Tyler, this one is for you.
He had one wish as he makes his way toward the Purdue locker room, and that was for Purdue to upset Ohio State and for him to be here to see it.
Boiler up!
Anytime.
You inspiration to us all.
I feel like I can do anything with all the strength you got, boss. I can do anything behind you, boss.
You got it.
This young man has been strong. His family's been strong. For him to even be here is remarkable. The guy never makes excuses. He never complains. He has a huge smile on his face every day. And that's really what being a Boilermaker is all about.
The Purdue Cancer Center tweeted out the following. It's with the deepest sorrow that we all have to say goodbye to Tyler. We have all become Tyler Strong. To his family, words can't express how sorry we are that he has passed. His life may have been short, but his legacy will be forever. Purdue alumnus Tyler Trent was 20 years old.
Clemson and Alabama once again meeting for a championship.
Lawrence lofts it up to the end zone. Touchdown, Clemson.
Tagovailoa looking deep in the end zone. Touchdown.
There was a feeling of inevitability that these two giants would clash again.
We're going to Cali, baby.
The national championship. Monday on ESPN.
We've seen this all before. Bama and Clemson have met in the previous three college football playoffs. The Tide taking two of the matchups. They split two national championship games that were both classics. SportsCenter takes us back through the years with these two.
We started the season and we all said that it looked like it was going to be Clemson, Alabama.
These two teams have been the best. Anybody that has fatigue of this matchup, why would you get tired of excellence?
As O.J. Howard behind the defense. He's going in. Touchdown, Alabama!
Side kick, Griffith, and it's caught. Alabama's got the ball back. Look out, Kenyon Drake can fly. 95.
back on top of the college football world.
There was a feeling of inevitability that these two giants would clash again.
In the clear, and it scores!
I couldn't let these seniors go down like we did last week.
This could be the final play of the college season.
Watson rolls to the right.
Touchdown!
Clemson is declared king of college football and national champ.
Saban, Dabo, trilogy.
Brian, pressure!
The Crimson Tide win the national semifinal.
Alabama and Clemson are the two best records in points per game differentials in the FBS since 2015. They're a combined 109-7 over that stretch, and three of those losses have been to each other. We have reporters in both Alabama and in upstate South Carolina. Let's start with Marty Smith in Tuscaloosa.
Chris, the comparisons between Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence and former Clemson star quarterback Deshaun Watson are many, and they're warranted. Both show great poise, both great ability to diagnose defenses pre- and post-snap, both former Georgia high school phenoms. And while Lawrence certainly appreciates the comparisons to Watson, he just wants to be Trevor Lawrence.
I want to write my own story. I'm not chasing really anything he did as far as that. I mean, obviously I want to win a national championship like he did and hopefully more than one. But as far as chasing what he did, I want to make my own path and be my own person. I'm not really chasing anything that he did necessarily, but he's definitely a good guy to look up to and was really successful.
I chatted with Watson on Tuesday and asked what advice he would give Lawrence as Lawrence prepares to face Alabama in the national championship on Monday. He said, do not change your preparation and make sure to maintain emotional balance when adversity hits. You're playing Alabama. Adversity will hit at some point. Know it all starts with you. Go be great. Now let's head down to Tuscaloosa and Allison Williams. Allison.
Marty, having faced those Tigers the last 3 years in the playoff, Alabama players know to expect a physical, hard-fought, and close game, which isn't always the case for the Tide. Since 2015, their average margin of victory is nearly 26 points per game. But in their three games against Clemson, the average victory for either team just by 9 points. So Alabama players know to expect a fight from start to finish.
We know it's going to be physical. We know that we're going to have to earn every yard and every point that we get. My second favorite sport to watch is boxing, so it definitely does feel like a heavyweight fight between two, you know, undefeated opponents.
You know, we feel like they know us, and we feel like we kind of know them. So it's going to go down to all about, you know, who wanted it more. You're going to get hit in the mouth. You're going to get hit back in the mouth. So it's going to be all about who wanted it more.
So Alabama knows to expect a battle, but one thing that is a bit of an unknown for the Tide is Clemson freshman quarterback Trevor Lawrence. But that works both ways. Wilson added that Lawrence doesn't know them either, so it's important for them to try and make him one-dimensional and to fear the Tide a little bit. Cotter, back to you.
Thank you, Williams. Appreciate that. Now, Trev, no one is ever going to complain if we get a national championship like we got in 15 and 16 between these two. But last year's 24-6 win by Bama in the semis was a real dud. Are we kind of getting tired? Is there a little fatigue between these two? Or do you think everybody loves seeing these two Titans go at it?
No, I love seeing the best of the best, for goodness sake. Don't you like that, Greg?
Could you not? Like, for instance, for like a football purist, this is the matchup we've all been clamoring for. But for someone that's interested in potentially growing the sport, yeah, there's probably some lethargy when you look at this matchup. But then again, the only thing that's the same are the names of the universities and the jerseys. But the players are actually quite different. Tua Tagovailoa has never played against Clemson. Trevor Lawrence on the other side has never played against Alabama. Like, yeah, we've seen three parts of this story before, but these rosters are completely different than what we saw a year ago, especially on the offensive side of the football.
And they maintain their excellence all the way through. I love the clash of titans. I love planets colliding. I think it's fantastic for a final. And when you look at both these teams on both lines of scrimmage, combination O-line and D-line, These are the two best on the line of scrimmage. They will be the most brutally physical matchup we could possibly have had. When I talked to Texas coach Tom Herman in this offseason and asked him how he's building his program, and he said it's about physicality. He said he has never seen a national championship winning coach say after he won the national championship, we did it because we out-finessed them. Well, these teams can do finesse, but they can do brutal, and that's what I love.
I'm interested in seeing the freshman quarterback go in the national championship against Nick Saban and his defense. That, for me, that is probably the most intriguing thing. I know the talent of Trevor Lawrence. I saw Nick Saban and this Clemson team go against Deshaun Watson, who we all knew at the time was the best quarterback in college football. Are we there on Trevor Lawrence yet? I don't think so. This is a freshman quarterback about to play in the biggest game of his life, starting quarterback in this series that means so much now. I'm intrigued. Trevor Lawrence can become almost a thing of folk if they win this game, and he has success against Alabama in this defense, and they bring home a national championship with Dabo Swinney. But also, guys, this is the move Dabo Swinney made to be in this position that he's in right now. So there are so many storylines revolving around this matchup. And like you said, G, you are not a fan of the game if you're not a fan of seeing the best square off. I don't know in any other sport where anybody said, I want to see the number one team play against the number 100 team, and that's going to be exciting. I don't know of that. Never heard of it.
No, and the committee, the playoff committee obviously hadn't either. I mean, they've, once again, they've gotten it right. The top two teams in the country playing for the national championship, clearly. There was a lot of chatter going through like halftime of that Alabama-Oklahoma game that the committee was awful, that they put Notre Dame in there and Oklahoma shouldn't have been in there. But right. Mac, when you look at what happened last night with Texas winning and with Washington coming back to make it close against Ohio State, UCF losing, did the committee get it absolutely right this time around?
I don't know if they would necessarily say they got it right, but they didn't get it wrong. Based on the information that they had available to themselves at that point, I would say that the teams ranked 1 through 15 were pretty accurate, but that was based on information that was given to us 5 weeks ago. Things change over the course of the bowl season, and clearly those teams that were ranked number 3, number 4, number 5, number 7, number 8, number 9, those teams clearly did not improve from December 1st until January 1st, because I saw an egg that was laid last night by Georgia that I did not anticipate. Washington really struggled until the final 12 minutes of that football game in the Rose Bowl. We saw a pretty disappointing effort, I think, from Michigan, obviously, in the Peach Bowl. UCF hung in there, battled, but that game was really not as close as the score might indicate. So if anything, what I learned this bowl season is that there is no reason to expand the college football playoff. 4 is fine. If anything, 4 is too many, because there are a lot of very average football teams that we were considering putting in the playoff and we're trying to make a case for them. When in doubt, less is more, and clearly 4 is the correct number at this point.
I thought they absolutely got the right 4 based on the information that they had at the time.
Yeah.
I think the fact that the semis weren't competitive or as competitive as we would have wanted, not because 3 and 4 weren't good enough, but because 1 and 2 were so dominant. And
right.
I think from a standpoint of how the committee talked this year, I loved it. Because instead of worshiping at the altar of the almighty spreadsheet and talking numbers and strength of record and strength of schedule and all that stuff, they were talking about what they saw on tape. And Marcus, I loved the way they described it.
Guys, I love y'all, and all of this harmony is great with 3 and 4, but y'all know damn well Georgia and Ohio State would have been a better 3 and 4 game matchup-wise with both of these 1 and 2 teams. I don't care what anybody says. Notre Dame, nobody ever was really sold on them. They had a really good season, and they deserve to be in the playoff. I've said that many times. You look at Oklahoma, what was the question? Defense. They're not going to be able to stop anybody. We talked about that. The score was 28-0 before we blinked against Alabama. I'm not sure if the committee got it right because the matchups were wrong and you could have justified putting the other two teams in based off who you thought film-wise was the best 4 teams in the country. I get it. Georgia lost their opportunity in the SEC championship, losing to Alabama. I understand that argument. But both of you guys know as much tape as y'all absorb, as much football as y'all watch and have been around, Georgia and Ohio State were better matchups for Alabama and Clemson.
I disagree with that.
I don't disagree with that necessarily. What I would say is that deserving needs to be measured, though. And Ohio State lost that opportunity by being so remarkably inconsistent. Even in a dominant performance yesterday over Washington, yeah, they looked great for the first 42 minutes in the game. But how about the last 18 minutes? Because I'm pretty sure Washington outscored them 20-0 over the course of the final 12 minutes of that football game last night. So I look at Ohio State, and that was a microcosm of their season. They were up and down, up and down. Look, Oklahoma, yeah, did they have any defense? Absolutely not. But they deserved to be there because they were more consistent than Ohio State was. Consistently bad on one side of the football, but consistent nonetheless. And how can we knock Notre Dame? I get it. Personnel-wise, they don't stack up to Georgia. They don't, based on personnel and depth and quality. But I can't knock a team that went undefeated and beat 10 Power 5 teams in the process, Trev. That just is not something I want to try to forecast on and project.
Yeah, Greg, I like what you said about deserving, because sometimes the better team doesn't take care of business. Georgia went to LSU and got smoked. Ohio State went to Purdue, got smoked. But I do see the Notre Dame squad differently, I think, than you just described. I think they have a better defensive line than Georgia does. I think Notre Dame has a better offensive line, frankly, top to bottom, than Georgia does. So I think Notre Dame is a better team than people give them credit for. They just ran into a buzzsaw with Clemson.
The argument as to who is 3, 4, 5, 7, 9 will obviously carry on. Who is 1 and 2? That argument we know about. That one is settled, and we'll settle who number one is Monday night at 8 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. The College Football Playoff National Championship game presented by AT&T, Levi Stadium, Alabama, Clemson, round 4. Could Cliff Kingsbury go from West Texas to LA to the Big Apple in a New York minute? He may be on the move again. We'll explain next on College Football Live. To the coaching carousel, ESPN and several others are reporting that Cliff Kingsbury will interview with both the Cardinals and Jets regarding their open head coaching positions. NFL GMs have suddenly become enamored with the idea of spread offenses and coaches who dabble in such magic. I got two former Jets on the panel right here. Greg, his prospects at the NFL level?
Everyone's looking for the next Sean McVay. If you want an offensive, innovative mind, a young coach that's marketable, that has some star power, this is your guy. Cliff Kingsbury was not overwhelmingly successful at Texas Tech, but people are thinking they'll take him, he'll go call plays, he'll develop and groom a young quarterback like they have in Arizona, like they have in New York, with Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold respectively, and then they'll go out, they'll get an established defensive coordinator like they have in Los Angeles. They have Wade Phillips in L.A. They'll get that wherever he ends up, and I can understand why they're starting to put the pieces together, especially knowing, too, look at some of the guys that are being considered for some of these NFL jobs. So we'll talk about Lincoln Riley in a minute, but you're seeing a lot of retreads. You're seeing a lot of coordinators. At least Cliff Kingsbury, you know who he is. He's marketable, and I think your fan base might resonate with that marketability, especially if you're in New York where you need to hire a star. So it makes sense. I'm just not so sure if it's the correct decision for these NFL programs.
I'm going to make my statement. I want to hear guys respond to this. The program is translating a lot from college now. It's starting to make sense on that level to a lot of decision makers that these college coaches have infiltrated what the offenses are going to be for the future of the NFL. When you look, the prime example is Pat Mahomes, and Andy Reid has done a tremendous job of just making Pat Mahomes more of what he was at Texas Tech. I think that is the appeal. You look at Lincoln Riley call plays and you think to yourself, this dude can call plays on any level. It doesn't matter if he was in the NFL or not. Like Greg said, the marketability of a Cliff Kingsbury coming from the Big 12, offense, offense, offense. That's what the league is trended to. You can't even tap somebody on the shoulder without getting a targeting call anymore in football in the NFL anyway. So they're trying to put points on the board. I think the game translation is the reason we're starting to hear about these prolific, perceivably, offensive coaches coming out of college and being prospects for pro jobs.
Marcus, I agree with you from a standpoint of what the NFL wants, but from a standpoint of Cliff Kingsbury, I think if he's thinking long term, he'd be out of his mind to go to the NFL right now because of the great situation he's in at USC. He's got a hot young quarterback in JT Daniels. He's got a great receiving core. He's set up to have great success right out of the box. Now, if he does that, then he can go to the NFL with even more credibility. Then he will have built his brand. But if he goes straight to the NFL, if he struggles there, then the last two stops would have been fired as a head coach at Texas Tech, struggled and bounced out of the NFL. What happens to his brand? I think the NFL will always be there for him. But right now, his opportunity to succeed at a high level at USC is right in front of him. And I think that will only enhance his future marketability.
And we're seeing coaches like Vance Joseph at Denver and all these other coaches in the NFL get fired after 2 years. Well, right. 1 year in Arizona. So there's no longevity in the NFL. And, Trev, when you look at Lincoln Riley, he signs an extension now to stay at Oklahoma. Is that his best spot? As long as he's getting paid there in Norman, does it make sense for him to stay at the college level?
Well, yeah, he's getting paid there. He is in a place that's a great place to live. He's at a school that has a history of staying with coaches for a long time. But I disagree, guys, with the concept that the NFL is a higher level for coaches. I think it's a different level. There are different sets of problems, and plenty of NFL coaches have come to the college level and failed miserably. So I don't buy into the notion that college coaches want to test themselves against the best. It's not the best. It's just different.
It's completely different. And Lincoln Riley, I've said it on this show, I've said it on a bunch of other shows, Lincoln Riley would be clinically insane to leave his job at Oklahoma to go to the NFL, at least at this point. Look, he's been a head coach for two seasons, and he's going to be at a place where it's a destination for quarterbacks to end up, and in that league, if you have a quarterback, you have a chance. He can roll out of bed and win 10 games every single year. Now, do they have some things that they need to iron out on the defensive side of the football? Yes, but with the resources and the stability that Oklahoma's program has shown over the last few decades, you'd be crazy to leave. I think he's got a great job, a job that in a lot of ways is far superior to a job that he would be getting in the NFL.
Absolutely disagree with both of you guys, because Lincoln Riley can always come back to college and get a job based on what he's done already at the University of Oklahoma. If it's in his competitive nature, and I heard you guys say it's not the best, the NFL is the best. That's where the best players are. That's where it's considered to be the toughest place to win football games. And that's the last stop you can possibly be in American football. And I think a lot of these coaches in the back of their mind would at least like an opportunity to try to go and see how they stack up on that level. I get it. They're making crazy money. They're doing a successful job. I go back to my coach from LSU. Nick Saban had just won a national championship at LSU. He knew he could have success at that program. They gave him the keys to everything that you could give him to at LSU, and he decided to go coach for the Miami Dolphins. And that was because of his competitive nature. And regardless of what anybody thinks, the NFL will always be looked at as a destination to see if you can go succeed. And if you can succeed, it's different than being a successful head coach in college football.
Seems like they've all had to, you know, scratch that itch, whether it's Lou Holtz or Saban or Spurrier, Pete Carroll. They've all had to, at some point in time, give their best shot at the
NFL. And they all
was
able to come back. They were all able to come back.
But the same is true the opposite direction.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to wrap up New Year's Day. Oh, Snell, yeah. Benny Snell with a career day for Kentucky coming up.
From Plan to Play is brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. Spend your life living.
Let's take a look at From Plan to Play, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. Benny Snell, 144 yards, two touchdowns, en route to becoming Kentucky's all-time leading rusher. The Wildcats won their 10th game of the season in the VRBO Citrus Bowl over Penn State. Marcus, he's a special player. Kentucky had a special season, but Georgia's awesome. Florida's getting better. Tennessee's getting better. Can the Wildcats hang with these top-level teams in the SEC now moving forward?
I don't think they have enough speed to continue, Chris. You look at the coaching changes that was made. You look at Florida. It was a 4-8 football team. They won 10 games this year. We know Kirby Smart isn't going anywhere. We just saw where he ranked in the recruiting. Tennessee, I'm still on the fence about Tennessee and seeing what Jeremy Pruitt is going to do with that program, where he can take them in the future. Kentucky was good this year. They were senior led. They have some guys that are going to be successful on the next level. I don't know how much you recycle that at the University of Kentucky. Now, with all of that being said, I want to take no credit away from Mark Stoops. He did a tremendous job. He's bringing this program into a part of a light that they haven't been in a while. There is a bit of consistency there in this program. The problem for Mark Stoops is the people in his own division. And the people in his own division are going to take leaps and bounds as far as getting players, as far as how they develop them, than Kentucky will, unfortunately, because I love what they did this year. They made the most of these guys being veterans.
It was really fun to watch, but this was a team that Mark Stoops has been waiting for the last 4 years. You mentioned they are senior laden. They are. A lot of these guys, underrated prospects that kind of blossomed and grew and started for 4 years. So they cashed in on their opportunity. They won 10 games. Congratulations. But it's going to be difficult to sustain, at least in the short term. They went to the JUCO route. We'll see how it does. I just can't envision a scenario in which they get to double-digit wins again next year.
Now, their fan base can't take the cheese that this will be the way it will always be. Kentucky is like most mid-level programs, that they'll play well, and then once in a while when they have 13 seniors starting, which Kentucky does, plus Benny Snell, who's a junior, that they will be in a position to be able to make a run, but then they'll come back down to quite good, but don't expect 10 wins every year.
Yeah, the fan base is, let's be honest, is waiting to get into Rupp Arena. They're waiting in line right now to get into the next basketball
game. Don't say that.
Game.
You don't say that. Don't say that.
They enjoy,
Kentucky's a football team.
They enjoy their football in Lexington. They live for basketball, though. We've got more football Saturday at noon on ESPN2, the FCS National Championship game, Eastern Washington taking on the Bison from North Dakota State. It's ESPN2, also on the ESPN app at noon. Let's take a look at our Progressive Bowl Challenge Cup. Conference USA has wrapped up the best record for the fourth time, tied with the most with the Mountain West, dating back to 2002. One chance left for the ACC and SEC to improve upon their bowl records. Greg, when you look at the standings, what's your biggest takeaway?
Well, it has to be the Big 12. How about the Big 12 coming into bowl season? Vegas said that they would win 2.5 bowl games. Well, they're at 4. That's a pretty impressive performance considering they were underdogs in so many matchups. So the Big 12 and their performance in the bowl season has really caught my eye, even though there's not much difference between any of the Power 5 leagues.
Gee, I agree with you. I wanted to go somewhere different, but after what Texas did to Georgia, I have to agree with you. That's probably the biggest shocker of the bowl season so far, and that's a huge program booster for Texas. And the Big 12 can stick their chest out because Georgia not only was considered the second best team in the SEC, they also were considered a team that should have been in the college football playoff. So Texas just solidified the Big 12 being on top right now.
Well, so you guys are positive, so I have to go the opposite. I think the American wanted to have a better bowl record to show that they were a Power 6 conference.
Hey, we got another hour coming your way tomorrow with College Football Live. Check us out then. Thanks for watching, everyone.